Moving on.
If we were to hum that theme tune, could the record label behind it bust us?
No, I think probably. They'd try.
Really?
Yeah.
Should we try it?
No.
No.
Why not?
Because I don't want to get busted by a record label. What? Because we're humming it.
My potential.
Read on. Read on.
Sorry, carry on.
Season 5, episode 10 of Lugger Radio. Welcome, I'm Matthew Ravel.
We've gone back in time, yes.
Oh my god.
Hello.
It's Matthew.
Let's all use Mandriva.
Sorry, Mandrake.
My god, x.org doesn't work. It's 2004 all over again. Now, Matthew P. Ravel is here.
I am, yes.
Precisely because Adam Sweet, for reasons we can't disclose on the show, can't make it.
Ha. You know what we should do? We should get our listeners to send in ideas as to why Adam can't be here, because we can't say it. He hasn't got some kind of lecherous STD or something.
Well,
but yes.
Yeah. Yep. Send us in your theories why you think Adam can't be here to show at LugRadio.org.
Has his voice finally got so deep that he can't talk into a microphone?
Yes. So we have Matthew P. Ravel, indeed.
Hello. My name is Chris Proctor.
My name is John O'Bacon.
And I'm Stuart Langridge.
What are we going to talk about? You know what? I'd like us to do a review of KDE4. It's brand spanking new. It's shiny. It looks like Vista. We're going to tell people what we think of it.
We're also going to talk to Aaron Sider and Will Stevenson, who are at the KDE release party.
Yes, indeed.
Jono, in the last Lug Radio Top Trump section, will give his scores for the five categories.
And a bit of a bonus. We're going to talk about Mr. Ravel as well.
We are.
Just a little bit of a bonus there.
Very, very, yeah. Very small bonus.
Not quite a Brucey bonus. And talking of Brucey or Bruno, in the email section will be...
Weakling! You are the weakest link.
Fuck off.
In an extended email section, we'll also be talking about what would make you leave free software. Thanks very much to a forum post by Bruno Board.
Yeah, in the ideas of the show forum at forums.lugradio.org. Send in your ideas. So
let's get it on the road.
Should we get this show on the road and one foot in the grave or whatever the hell we used to say?
On the back foot.
1994/2004.
Get on with it.
I think I've just had a stroke. We don't actually give a shit about KDE4.
Now, that's not fair.
But we thought we'd test it anyway.
That's not fair. I mean, I give a shit about KDE4.
A shit on KDE4.
No, that's not fair. I mean, there are somewhat less than half of the Linux community is using it, so we probably ought to talk about it.
When you say somewhat less than half, you mean about 1%. And when people say, you've got to get everything in perspective with Linux. Only 1% of the industry is using Linux, and then 1% of that 1% is using KDE, and 1% of that 1% is using KDE4.
Was this segment going to be like, let's all kick KDE4 then?
Anyway, we thought KDE4 is quite interesting. Let's do a review.
people have repeatedly ragged on us in the past, not entirely unjustifiably, that we don't like KDE4.
That's just been demonstrated for the last 30 seconds.
That we don't like KDE, and we don't give it a fair crack of the whip. So, we have all tried, because KDE4's just come out, it's quite a big deal.
It is a big deal. And to be fair to them, when they started out, they said, we're going to do this, and plasma and oxygen, all this kind of stuff. And they've actually gone ahead and done it.
The thing I think, before we get on to talking about the thing itself, they went through the same sort of process that GNOME went to for the move between 1.x and 2.x. Mm. They sat down and thought, right, okay, we need to define a direction, we need to work at what we're going to do, and they need to actually get on and frigging do it.
Yep.
And they did that, and they've come up with something which I think is actually quite a nice looking desktop. And they made it work well.
They've done it quite efficiently as well, because unlike the GNOME people, they haven't spent lots of time taking pictures of themselves, spelling out the word evolution, bending next to each other like fucking Nat and Miguel. They've actually spent time developing
some code.
Yeah. It's so let's talk about the review. We've downloaded the Kubuntu Live CD.
Well, I tested the Kubuntu Live CD of KDE 4, not the pre-release, but actual KDE 4.
I was playing with the OpenSUSE one, although it's very similar to Kubuntu.
I downloaded the Kubuntu Live CD. I downloaded the RC2 first, because we were going to talk about this in the last show, and then we thought, no, we'll wait for the final release. And then I downloaded the final thing, which I suspect is the same one that you had,
yes. Ak.
And then we've all looked at it today. So the
I
one
installed KDE 4 from a PPA on Launchpad.
Did you?
Yes. Did you actually?
I did actually, but I didn't reboot in time to use it.
That was an utterly pointless process.
Got to love the fact that the only people who use the PPAs on Launchpad are members of the Launchpad team, and even they don't do it right.
That's not true. That's not true. It's been very successful. Jonathan Riddell is...
Matt, he's the troll.
What?
He's a troll. Don't be the troll.
Also,
anyway, KDE4.
Anyway, so moving on to the point.
Yeah, it looks really pretty. I mean, it's really nicely. They've actually done some nice proper graphics. It looks nice.
I would say it looks nice, but I admit, as pointed out to me earlier, this may be a theming issue. But I'm convinced that some of the window borders and the menus look a little 1992 to me.
This is true.
The CDE
some
look.
Of it. Yeah, kind of, CDE.
I mean, this is the problem with it at the moment. I think a lot of it looks really nice, and then some of it looks
bollocks.
Really old.
Yeah.
What's in there
that isn't just a case of someone slapping a new theme on it? I mean, yet finally, this KDE clock on the taskbar, again, doesn't look like something from the mid 90s. But I mean, what else is there that they've done that isn't just drawing?
Don't take the piss out of the clock. If there's one thing that KDE do very, very well, it's clocks.
Well, the KDE4 clock is lovely. But before that, I used to be embarrassed by my Susie.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they've done two fundamental things, really. And they've rewritten a lot of the underneath to pull it up to being a much more modern operating system than KDE3 was. They're using... I mean, I'm not sure whether they're actually using HAL or whether Solid is their version of HAL, or whether it's an interface layer on top of HAL, but they've rewritten a lot of the underneath, so Dolphin, the new file manager, is a lot sleeker. It's quite a lot more impressive.
I mean, not as good as Nautilus.
Depressingly, in my head, I define it as being now a lot more like Nautilus, and so I like it more. It's quite hard to disassociate, is this actually better from, is it more how I like it?
But you mentioned Solid there, right? I mean, this may be a Kubuntu problem again, rather than necessarily a KDE4 problem, but what the freak is Solid? And... The reason I ask is because we were flicking through the menus earlier, trying to get a bloody wireless connection on your laptop.
Yes,
Jono, I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And we were flicking through the menus, and there was an icon of some spanners, and it said Solid. Now, if I was just a normal user, and I don't necessarily know if KDE are going for that sort of user, but and I saw the word Solid underneath an icon of some spanners, I wouldn't know what that was all about.
Well, the thing is, as far as more, Solid is a one of the common themes of KDE4, from what I can gather, is about abstracting things away. So, for example, with Phonon, it abstracts away multimedia frameworks such as GStreamer and NMM and things like that to a consistent API, which applications use. And Solid, as far as I'm aware, does the same thing for hardware.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
whether it's a layer on top of HAL or whether it is HAL.
I think it is a layer on top of HAL, as far as I think. Why should you have to know what that is?
Well, the thing is,
well, this is the thing. I mean, we plugged the USB key ring in, nothing happened. Now, you don't know if there's a problem with Kubuntu because it's a very early release.
Or it could be a problem because it's a live CD or whatever. But that's a bit...
The thing
disappointing.
I think we did two simple tests trying to connect to my wireless network. We couldn't actually find the tool to connect to it at all in KDE. Now, even if that's a Kubuntu problem, you'd think that that's... Even if they didn't ship something, you'd think that KDE itself would have... In the same way that in GNOME, you've got the little wireless thing in the top corner. Mm-hmm. So you can find it straight away.
The network manager switched on, according to Solid Crew.
Yeah.
According to Solid, yeah. Having a poke around through all the configuration menus, we found something which said, network handling, use network manager by default, or words to that effect, which sounds useful, but there didn't appear to be network manager. And then we thought, well, maybe we need to add a network manager applet to the panel, but then we couldn't work out how to add applets.
You couldn't actually figure out how to put an applet in there, because whenever you right-click the panel, it right-clicks over the thing that you're on, and the taskbar takes up the full panel other than the other bits.
So it just says, show this taskbar. Yeah. It's got show task manager and remove this taskbar.
Is this because we're all so indoctrinated in the GNOME way of doing things?
I think we're indoctrinated in the fact that you right-click on something to try and access it. You want to add something to something, you generally right-click.
And if
you want to add something to the desktop, you often right-click.
And if that doesn't work, then you have a poke around in the menus. I mean, maybe there's an applet manager in there somewhere that we didn't see.
I did look for a way of managing the whole sort of task manager and... Yeah,
because you were trying to reduce.
I was trying to make it smaller. Yeah, it takes up about an inch of the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, which is a lot on a 12-inch screen. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It takes up a lot of the screen. So I thought, I'll make it a bit smaller. Could I find a way of doing it?
The other thing is that they've redesigned. One of the big gripes out of KD, and one of the reasons why I lost interest in the project, was the fact that there was buttons galore in the control center, and they've redesigned it so it looks more like Mac OS X, kind of the GNOME control center sort of thing, which looks is nice. It's nice and it categorizes things reasonably well. But then when you load up each of the tools, it's still the same old shit that you got in the previous control center, from what I can tell. And like, so a good example is there's one in there called Network. We clicked on that, and the first thing it shows you is proxy settings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you're thinking, I want to connect to a wireless network. You bring up the settings thing, and then it's in there. It's got network configuration. You think, maybe that's it. That's it. Click on it. And it's got setting the timeout for your FTP proxy. Setting the timeout for your proxy. Setting whether you can have passive mode turned on in FTP. And that's the first thing you see when you click on network.
Basically, four sliders that did things that we didn't... Well, I didn't understand.
I think this is kind of like the fundamental feeling I got from the entire KD4 was bits of it look really nice and really well polished, and I suspect all of the kind of the low level stuff is all really well done, and then bits of it need some work. Somebody with some kind of design experience, design nous,
well, I mean,
to kind of sit down and just polish it off.
You're talking about functional design here, not about graphical design.
UI design.
Kind of, so when you click on a button, the first thing that comes up isn't the proxy settings. Right. It's what you might be looking for.
Designing the function.
You want new users to look at it and say, hang on, I don't get this.
It's kind of a usability thing. Somebody who knows about that. And, you know.
I mean, we're all technical people, and we could not figure out how to connect to the wireless network. No. We could not figure out how to get the USB key to work. Now, admittedly, some of these problems may be with Kubuntu.
And they may be because it's a live CD.
Any way of actually doing it. It wasn't like we found the button, we pressed it, it didn't work.
Yeah.
We couldn't find the button.
Was the other thing, is that one thing we should stress is that the KD team has said, you know, 4.0, there will be some bugs, there will be some rough edges, which, to be honest with you, I find concerning in itself. Why can't they just wait longer and stuck that out? Because basically 4.1 is going to be the proper version of KD.
I mean, if, again, you know, I'm not the KDE team. If that was me, I'd have called it 3.99RC1 or something.
Yeah.
And stuck with that. So you can then, when you do your big KDE4 push, you're not saying... actually wait for KDE 4.1.
Wasn't the logic of it that they if they put out KDE 4, people like us will test it. If they put out KDE 3.99999 recurring, we'll all go, oh, we'll wait till 4 comes out.
I think the thing
so they really wanted it out into the world and get lots of people to try it out and go, this doesn't work, so then they can fix it.
Unfortunately, that's the same logic that leads to you walking into a newsagent and saying, I'll buy this month's magazine, you know, it being January now, and it says April 2008 on the cover.
It doesn't actually harm anybody.
Yeah, but it's increasingly stupid and annoying.
I see the logic of you know, nobody will try out
nobody
a pre-release, no matter how great they were, how much they sing about it.
The original point I was going to make regarding this was that I'm conscious that we don't pick them up on lightly bugs. But to be fair, from the testing I've given of KD4, and I've given it two reasonable testing sessions, is that I haven't actually really seen many bugs. Things I've seen have been things which I think are wrong design decisions. So a good example is, when you click on the K button, the new thing pops up, right? It's different to the original KDE 2 and KDE 3 menu.
It pops up, right?
I can't remember what it's called.
It's called bloody awful.
Features favourites.
K shit. Okay. I can't remember what it's called.
No.
But anyway, it pops up. And at the bottom of the window, you've got like a big icon for applications and one for computer and things like that.
One for favourites, and these
are different settings, different categories. The thing is, I'd have expected you click on that and then you get the things above it. But when you hover over it, it moves.
Hovering over one of these things selects it rather than clicking on it.
It's intensely irritating. Now, the thing is, To me, that ain't a bug. That's a stupid decision.
That's a design decision. Yeah, I mean, to pick an example, the menu is of fixed height. It doesn't change in height at all, which means that if you've got, say, the application thing, if you've got more applications than will fit in the height of the menu, then it puts a right-hand vertical scroll bar on it, which is fine. But it means if you're moving the mouse down to try and hit the bottom one on the menu and you stray one pixel over onto the line of buttons along the bottom, your menu suddenly switches away. Yeah. And then you stick your fist through the screen. It's really irritating.
There's something wrong with
it. I did it twice. The first 10 minutes of using it, I did it twice.
There's something wrong with the usability of it when I actually started using that menu and thought, stuff this, I'm going to use the keys because it's easier to navigate.
To pick another silly example, using that menu, I first used it. I thought, I'm not going to read stuff about KD4. I want to come to it with a fresh mind rather than...
Yeah.
And so I started using the menu, and I thought, oh, menu pops up. And then you don't actually have to click on an item. When you click on something in the menu, if it takes you to a sub-menu, the whole menu, the whole contents of the menu kind of slide.
So it's very much like Mac OS X. That's the way it works.
So you can't see the previous things you had selected. You just see the next thing.
Okay. You're like in the Mac OS X file picker.
In the file picker, yeah. So... I thought, fine, and I'd scrolled along to there. And then when you go back to the menu again, it remembers where you were. And I thought, okay, how do I go back up to a higher level? And I'm not kidding, it took me 5 minutes.
I was the same.
To work out how to do it.
I was the same, yeah.
What it actually is, down the left-hand side of the menu, there's the whole left-hand side of the menu is basically a bar which takes you back up one level. But I was mousing over it and right-clicking and pressing the left arrow and rolling the mouse wheel and everything. And then I accidentally moved the mouse over this left-hand bar and it lit up blue. And I thought, oh, what does this do?
It doesn't show it. That's it, does it? I mean,
it not showing it might be a bug, but the way it works, as far as I'm concerned, has to be, I don't want to say bad design decision, but design decision I don't agree with and don't find intuitive. I mean, Matt's point about how we've all been indoctrinated into the GNOME way is a reasonable one,
but you still should be able to pick something up having to
know
the background.
So like I said earlier, I find it quite hard to be objective.
Kudos for doing something different that isn't just like re-implanting Windows.
Menu just looks to me like a bastardization of Vista and
stupid quiz. Doesn't the Vista start menu work like that with the slidey content?
Not really.
Software lover that you are. Vista.
I've used Vista. Yeah, I've used it a little bit. The start menu is nasty because on Vista, basically, you've got almost like a directory listing.
Yeah,
and you have to. It's very difficult to get used to when you're used to like the XP or whatever before.
It's not copied from Vista, right?
The thing is,
bastardization of the two, I think.
KD is often referred to itself as a contemporary desktop as well. So you'd expect it to respect some of the norms in the industry today. And I mean, a good example of this, one thing that I found irritating as well was that the window borders look inactive. Like the default border is like a light grey. And usually if a window is not in focus, it kind of goes grayer sort of thing and it's things like that even if you're trying to strive in a new direction. And when KD4 was first announced, they banged on about was usability. It's like, yeah, this is going to be, and they've fixed a lot of stuff. It looks very, very pretty. It looks great, and a lot of things are easier, I think, but I think that it feels bodged.
Yeah, I mean, the looks of it, when I put the Kubuntu Live in, it, you know, did all the crap on the screen, blah, loaded up, and then it started up with the, I don't know what you call it, the little KDE splash screen where the icons appear as it loads up KDE. K-Splash. It's probably called K-Splash.
Yeah. K-Splash.
And I just looked at it and went, oh, that's lovely. And it looks really nice.
Yeah.
I was really, I mean, I was running it in VirtualBox.
The icons right, still... So,
I like the oxygen icons.
Well, the disc icon looks lovely.
Yes.
It's basically a Mac OS X disc icon.
I basically take Matt's point about the crossed spanner and screwdriver, which is robbed from Windows 95 and is propagated by all the way up to KDE4, which disappoints me.
GNOME's guilty of that as well.
Yeah, GNOME is guilty of it as well. I would like us to step away from that a bit. And the little globe icon is a Mac OS X icon, I think.
One of the things I love about using GNOME, though, on Ubuntu, is I'm sure that I don't have to sit through that crap. I'm sure it does all the online stuff, but I don't remember actually sitting watching all that stuff come up anymore, which...
You've got to bear in mind that we were using a live CD, though, so yeah. It's going to be a lot slower.
You might find that if you actually got it installed, it did all that thing at the same speed it does on your installed GNOME desktop, i.e. in about one second.
When you're using Ubuntu or Gubuntu or whatever...
It doesn't show the icons going up. No, it just shows the Ubuntu splash
screen. And I like that, because that stuff's just...
There's less. But the thing is,
to continue a little bit about the look of the thing, there are bits of it which look... lovely. Some people are going to say it looks like Windows Vista, but I think Vista actually looks quite nice.
Yeah.
So there are bits of it which look lovely, but like John says, I think there are bits of it which don't yet look lovely.
I don't know whether
4.1 is going to fix, whether they're doing a visual refresh for 4.1 or what.
I hope so. I mean, it really does look like they need to put... It's so interesting to say after they put how many years worth of work into it, but it needs some more work. It needs some more polishing.
If they sat down, like, I know someone who's involved in KDE is Celeste Seal, I think her name is. I've met her once or twice before. She's interested in usability and KDE. And I know she takes a lot of interest. I'd like to see a lot of people bang on her door and say, Celeste, what do you think we should be doing? Because she's very, very keen on making usable interfaces. She knows what she's talking about. I'd like to see more people listening to people like her, because it needs, I think they need to set up a small usability lab, have people test it and figure these little flaws out and fix them. Because if they're so close. I think they are really close. It's a lot better than KDE 3, I think.
Yes.
But, and I think the actual applications, like if you look at KDE applications, like I tested a few different applications that have been ported to KDE 4, and they do look and feel nicer, but it just, you know, like KDE always has that clunky feel to it. Like GNOME, although GNOME doesn't look as pretty, GNOME to me feels sleeker.
Is that just because you're more used to it, though?
Well, not really, because I used to be a KDE user, and then admittedly this was back in the KDE 3 days, but I moved to GNOME. Because it felt sleeker. Yeah, nothing's dramatically changed.
And
with
that's
GNOME.
Precisely what motivated me to do exactly the same move. It's not I like the sleekness because I use GNOME more. I use GNOME more because
I'm not a big
fan
of GNOME personally. So yeah. No.
But so I think in summary, should we go around? Do you want to start, Ak?
I think they've done a good visual job, but I don't agree with a lot of the usability decisions that they've made.
Matthew P. Ravel.
I'm not him. Not that there's any...
Fucking hell.
No.
Stick the boot in. Sticks the boot into MPG live on air.
We've been sticking the boot into KDE4, so we might as well, you know.
Stick the boot into someone completely unrelated and not responsible.
And a usability guy, no less.
And your colleague. Anyway, carry on.
Yes.
Motherfucker.
I think it looks as though they've spent a lot of time making some of the graphics look nice. And they've definitely tried to make the usability better. And this sounds very patronizing and nasty, but I just don't think they're quite there yet. I think they've just got to take it that step beyond the icing, if you like.
Maybe read the GNOME Hughes,
the Hick.
Maybe read the Hick.
The Hick hasn't been updated for about 5 years. It's badly in need of an update in various places. Yeah.
Crispy Proctor.
I think you're both right, basically. It's kind of 90% of the way there, and if they do the next 10% right, 4.1 will be fantastic. Mm. If they don't, then it's going to be a bit of a damn strip. But, you know, you can see if they go in the right direction with it, they're definitely going to something good. So,
and I broadly agree with the three of you as well. Pretty much they're visually excellent job, but they need to fix these usability bits and pieces. I just think they're a bit premature with 4.0. And like Ak says, you know, it would have been nice for this to be a 3.9 release.
I see the logic of the 4 release.
But, you know, credit where credit's due. They've done a fantastic job. They just need to fix these last remaining rough edges and then
they obviously have put a lot of work into it. Only a little bit more work and they'll be there, I think.
Mm.
Okay, on the show right now, we've got Aaron Saigo and Will Stevenson, who are at the KDE4 release event over in Mountain View at Google in California. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. There's one of us at a time right now because we're using the handset. We're in a booth that bears a striking resemblance to a washroom stall. But, we're the... Will just tapped my foot with his foot. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe he got some paper.
I think that means don't insult the Google overlords.
yes, exactly. So, we're here at the Googleplex in Mountain View, and today is Community Day. Tomorrow is the actual presentations and whatnot. But yeah, it's been going great. We've been able to talk with people, the Linux kernel, well, some of them, not all the Linux kernel people, obviously, but they've got a number of kernel people here at the Googleplex, amazingly enough. Right. And they've been dropping in and visiting with us, and we're doing some boffs with them tomorrow, and we've got people from, you know, the media, the Ars Technica guys are already here and furiously taking notes and tapping our brains and whatnot. So, and we've got, you know, a couple dozen KDE hackers as well, yep. So...
And how many people have been attending the release event? How many people are... I mean, today, has the main release thing happened yet, or, like...
That's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow, okay.
Right. So today we've got about 100 people that have arrived for the first day, and then tomorrow we're up over 200.
Excellent. So. Excellent. And are you happy with the KD4 release so far?
Yeah, I mean, for exactly what we wanted to achieve, you know, I mean, it's obviously not the roll this out into your production corporate deployment release. It never was meant to be.
Right.
But it's accomplishing exactly what we wanted and needed, and that was get us off, you know, finish out the feature-based release cycle, get that behind us, move back into time-based releases, get people focused on polishing and feature completeness, get people actually testing it and allowing, you know, our partners that work on system integration issues, be they Linux distros or, you know, hardware manufacturers, to actually start, you know, playing with the APIs and the new applications and figuring out how this all fits into their existing offerings.
And in terms of the release event, obviously, like we say, it's over at Google in Mountain View. What kind of stuff are you doing at the release event? What kind of things have you got planned?
So, well, today and on Saturday, they're both community days in the sense that it's kind of a bar camp style kind of thing where people have come together, put up what topics, you know, are hot in their mind on their hit lists, and we've just created breakout sessions.
Terrorism.
So people are talking about all kinds of things from build systems to, we had a presentation day on Git, there was a marketing and promo boff. So that's today and Saturday. Friday is a structured presentation day. So tomorrow I'm doing a keynote in the morning that will be broadcast on the net as well so people can watch it on the web. We're going to have people such as the CEO from Trolltech is going to be presenting. We did a little contest to fly a couple of our, you know, community members from the user community in. So they'll be doing a little 50-minute presentation each as well, kind of describing and explaining, you know, that what their you know, take and viewpoint and connection with the community is. So that's kind of cool and different. So it's going to be, you know, some of the topics are going to be, you know, technical, and but tomorrow a lot of it's going to be fairly high level and taking a look at everything from what is 4.0, where are we going, I'll be covering roadmap issues tomorrow in my keynote, right through to some really neat community-based stuff. So,
excellent. That's cool. I mean, we've taken the opportunity to have a look at KDE4 and do a little review of it, and we were very nice about it, except in all the bits where we weren't. Mm-hmm. So what it'd be nice to do is give you a chance to listen to that, and then you can come back on the show next time and tell us we're all talking bollocks.
Return the show.
That'd be great. I've never known you guys to speak bollocks. I mean, that would be surprising from you.
We love you too, Aaron. Thank you very much.
That'd work out great.
If we could have you on the next show, then that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, you bet.
Excellent.
So I'm just going to pass you over really quick to Will here, who's next to me. He's been sitting patiently and I hog the phone.
Will, which one of us got your feet in a paper bag so it doesn't look like it's the TV in the booth?
Will, tell us why you're at the event.
I'm at the event with a bunch of other guys from the KDE community at SUSE, and we're just here to meet people, to meet the users, and have a bit of fun and let our hair down after some very busy few weeks getting KD4.0 packaged and tagged and out there.
Wicked.
And we're having fun.
You're a limey.
Excellent. Cool. You're a limey. He's been pointed out.
I'm a limey, yes. I'm of the northern persuasion.
Good move. So what do you do for Naval and OpenSUSE?
I'm on the KDE team, so I package it, I fix the bugs, I wipe its bottom, and I put it back on the street, you know?
Well...
Okay.
I'm sure you enjoy it, and I'm sure your KDE users actually appreciate the fact that you do it.
Yeah, and we're actually meeting quite a lot of them here. It's been really cool today. We've actually put out, mentioned it to a few people and put it on the website, and we've seen like 30 or 40 people from the Californian and North American communities who've come. They're not KDE contributors or hackers in any way. They're users, they're participants, and the people are interested, and it's really good fun to actually see the North American community step up and come and meet us and
Fantastic.
1:30 o'clock, yeah. It's having a really nice time here.
It sounds good. One last question before we wrap up. Any relation to George Stevenson, the inventor of the rocket?
No, but I did once live in Killingworth, the village where George and Robert Stevenson both lived at the time when they were inventing the rocket.
That can't be a coincidence.
It can't be, no. But I've never gone to the bottom of it.
Just remember, Lug Radio, that's where you hear it first.
Yeah, you do hear it first. It's good to have a direct descendant from George Stevenson on the show.
Well, I'm grateful to have found that out of you guys.
Well, you know, we're here to educate and inform. So, well, thanks so much for coming on the show, and I hope you and Aaron have a fantastic time at the release event. Congratulations
sure
on
thanks
on a
for
job
talking to us.
And we'll speak to you soon.
All right, speak
take
to
care.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Live from Wolverhampton, it's Lug Radio Top Trumps!
Bo chicka boom boom, shake shake that chicka wah wah room. It's the same five criteria that we've had in the last three episodes. So up front and number one, it's freedom crusading. Is this person the kind of person who likes freedom? And a little bit of crusading. Got nothing to do with rape and pillage, just crusading. Number two, it's tinkering. Does this person like to stick things in other things? Like Chris Proctor. All the charges were dropped. Number three, the underdog. Not the undercat or the under meerkat, but the underdog. Is this person a follower of those who are generally not very good? Communitization. Supporting the community with community things like community and community and community and wiki.ubuntu.com/community. Is it the communitization that the community likes? And finally, cheap. Is this person cheap and cheerful and buys stuff from Lidl as opposed to Marks & Spencer? Graham, over to you.
Are this week's contestant Jonathan Bacon from Wolverhampton? Jono scores for Freedom Crusading 7. Jono score for Tinkering 6. Jono scores for Underdog 2. Jono scores for Communitization 1. Oh no, 9. And finally, Jono score for Cheapness 6.
Okay, so Jono, in a surprise result here, your top score is Communitization.
Amazing, isn't it?
It's a shock to all of us here, I think.
Clearly in it for the chicks.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm stunned. Before we talk about why you're the only person in the whole world who actually gives a shit about the community, you're low on the underdog score.
Yes.
Why? I mean, I mean, you accused me of this last week, but I would have said you're someone who... Well, thrusts for the underdog. I mean, you like metal, for God's sake, not the world's most popular music.
In a similar way when you responded, it's not because it's the underdog. It's because I just like it. You know, like I like metal I like the energy and the passion behind metal. I'm not really that fussed the fact that no one listens to it. But it's I mean, the thing is, it's like. Yeah, it's important to a degree, but I mean, if I really like the underdog, I'd be running herd.
And the herd.
So yeah, it's not that important to me. I mean, it's the main thing is all the other stuff. The fact that Linux is not particularly well known compared to you know, Windows and things like that is not a big deal to me.
And it's not such the underdog anymore, anyway. Mm. I mean, we've got such high-profile support from major industry players. That
yeah.
Really, it's... I mean, you know, 7 years ago, perhaps, it was one of those things where, you know, if you've been running BIOS, you might also think, oh, I'll have a look at Linux, because that makes me a bit kooky.
Well, when I first got into Linux, which is literally about pretty much exactly about 10 years ago, because it was around this time 10 years ago, and which is what exactly means.
Well, actually, no. I wasn't going to say anything, but, you know...
Just for our... Less intelligent.
Thick listeners. Our French listeners.
We have no thick listeners. So and now we have no French listeners. So thank you for that, Matthew.
So I'm a temporary addition.
The reason why I got into Linux was because I found it interesting, not really the fact that it was really weird and obscure. The thing, I've said this before, and this is the reason why the community scores so high, is that the idea of this group of people being able to do stuff because they've got free access to the tools, and they're intelligent people can do cool things. That was the thing that really excited me about it. It wasn't the fact that it was niche and weird.
Did your love of community move over into other areas of your life, such as are you
interested? Is something wrong?
Such as are you interested in slash fiction or anything like that?
No. I'm not
What's
weird.
What's that got to do with community?
Well, it's fan fiction, all that. You know, it's just people getting together doing interesting. Right.
I got to be fairly specific here. It's not all communities. I mean, it's like that. I love the free software community.
Right.
But like I say, I'll never forget it. Right, when I first, you know, in the same way that when Ack went down Hovis Road in the last episode, when I first got into it, I remember getting Slackware Unleashed, and my brother spent 2 weeks installing it on my computer, and he fucked off.
It's actually slightly slower than that now when you do the installation.
And my brother fucked off, and I had this book, and the first chapter was about the community. And the thing that struck me was that just the potential of it, you know, it was really obscure and shit and technical. But the idea that all of these people, you know, it's like, you know, you've got all of this potential out there. And that's the thing I found fascinating. And I find that is a similar thing. Like, I've often thought, you know, why don't we encourage local communities to go around picking up litter and looking after local communities and, you know, where you live.
Trash mob.
That kind of stuff. And, but it's really the free software thing that interests me. I mean, I'm not so much interested in the metal community.
Is it something specific to the free software community? I mean, is there anything else out there? I mean, I know we've got the academic community, but that's not just ordinary people. That's a bunch of, you know, professional spots. So, I mean, the free software community is just everyone from every walk of life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that I love about it most is the fact that anybody... You know, we've always talked about this, that it's a meritocracy. Anybody can get involved if they're good. And that's one of the key things.
Is it people coming together to do stuff rather than people coming together to talk about stuff? I mean, you've expressed interest in things like OpenStreetMap before, which is, you know, it's connected to the free software community, but only fairly tangentially.
Yeah.
But it's people coming together to do a thing, whereas the metal community, you know, no one's coming together and producing metal. They're coming together to sit about and talk about metal.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's about doing stuff. I'm not so interested in user communities. Like, so, looking at Ubuntu as an example, I'm not as interested in people who use Ubuntu. I'm interested in people who contribute to Ubuntu. So in the same way that with metal, the metal in the metal world, I'm not that fussed about meeting people who listen to metal, but I'm more interested in people who, you know, who actively participating in it in some way. But it's just, I think, to me it's very exciting, the idea that if you have enough people and you organize them in the right way, anything's possible. And that's an exciting thing to me.
Zalia said that, I think, he cares about the community because they're his friends. Like, he cares about that section of the community, just the people he knows. It's not wider than that, particularly.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, but presumably that's not the case with you. It's not just the people you know within the community about. It's
one of the fortunate things, I think, one of the things I feel fortunate of is the fact that I've got a lot of friends in the free software community. Because... to me, that's a really nice thing. Like, I go to work every day and I meet and I talk to all kinds of people who are in the free software community, in different projects and in the Ubuntu community. Yeah. And it's nice because you meet all of these really nice people, really friendly people. And they're not only passionate about what they want to do, but they're just genuinely nice people. And to me, that's a real upside to it as well. They're not just technical people. Like, I can't remember if I said this to Ack when I first set up Wolves Lug. The idea to me of the perfect person in my mind is somebody who's really, really interested in technology, interested in what they want to do, but they can be social as well. So you can meet up, have a few beers, have a good laugh, they can switch off, tell a few knob gags, but then you can have a vicious debate about kernels if you want to.
Did you also manage to turn lead into gold?
And it's like, some people can do it, and that's where Lug Radio came from, was picking the people at Wolves Lug who could do that. And that's the idea behind Lug Radio. And the good, cool thing about Lug Radio and the Lug Radio community is that people who listen to the show often exhibit those traits. So now we've found a community of people who are social and nerds. And I think that's pretty cool. And look at what Lug Radio community's done as well.
Yeah, I mean, moving on from communitization of the community then.
Do we have to? No, I'm joking.
Well, one fairly interesting thing in there is you've rated yourself higher than everyone else apart from me at Freedom Crusading. And yet I received the unbelievable nuclear boot of death and destruction on I would say, pretty much a daily basis.
Because you're consistent.
From you about how freedom's not that important and... I shouldn't prioritise it above other stuff.
What was the laptop you were going to buy? NVIDIA?
Well, the thing is...
Yeah, I mean, you were looking for a laptop, and the one he's looking at, he's going to use closed-source NVIDIA drivers, and I said, wouldn't you be easier to just go and buy, you know, wouldn't it be better to go and buy an Intel one because then you're supporting freedom? And he said, well, no, not really.
If the only alternative, though, was to have one that ran on Steam, you would choose that, wouldn't you?
But that's not where we are now. We're at a point when you can buy a completely free software supportable laptop and you're not going to do it anyway.
No, it's not that I'm deliberately not going to. It's that the fact that the guy who's willing to sell me a laptop for a lot less money is going to offer one that happens to have an Nvidia card in it. If there was two identical laptops and you know, I'm not going to pay an extra £300 for a laptop that's got free hardware. And this is where we differ. You see, the thing is, the reason why my score is 7 is that freedom is a significant reason why I'm interested in Linux. Yeah. And I believe in free software. I believe that free software is a good thing. It's a right thing. But I'm not going to sell my grandmother to support it, right? And the thing is, I won't compromise my life to the levels that other people will. Now, obviously, Ack and I are different in this regard, and then Ack's different to someone like Matt Lee, who will literally compromise on any level so long as he's using free software, you know. Shall I say it?
No. That wouldn't be nice, poor Matthew. But yeah.
So the thing is that freedom's very important to me, but to me freedom's very important to me, but also I want to make sure that I want to be able to do stuff. Like, I'm not, like, we wouldn't, I don't believe we'd have the quality of Sound In Lug Radio if we were consistent and said we have to use a free platform. I'd rather have a good sound, but still contribute to projects like Chikosha or whatever to try and contribute towards free software, you know, in some way.
So freedom is a preference rather than a absolute goal.
I'd say that freedom is a lifestyle, but I'm not living a monk's lifestyle. Ack lives a monk's lifestyle. I don't. That's where we differ. I'm more of a
see the look on Ack's face at this point.
I'm more of an evangelical kind of nutter on the television in America in terms of religion. He's a monk.
Oh yeah, monks have more fun anyway.
What fun do monks
particularly
have?
Particularly in the medieval times.
So, I mean,
that's wicked.
I quite like that joke. So, my dad was a nun, you know.
Is that right?
He was. Yeah, every time he went to court, they said, "What's your occupation?" He said, "Nun."
Don't want to get in the abbot. Anyway,
and tinkering and cheapness, you both scored a 6, which is above average, but. You see, I think you like the idea of tinkering, but don't actually do it very much.
I think you're probably right.
I think that's an unjustifiably high score.
I'm looking at that score and thinking also, actually, no, because I'm lower than everybody else. I do tinker to a degree, but I don't tinker. I have bursts of tinkering. Like, Ack will know this as well. That about once every 4 or 5 months, I decide I want to write a Python program. And it's always shit. And then it always gets rewritten by somebody else who actually knows how to write Python code. But I like playing with stuff like MythTV and like playing with you know, little bits of software here and there. But I don't do it to a significant degree. So I have an interest in tinkering, but it's pretty marginal. It probably doesn't actually warrant a 6.
The cheapness, do you think that you are able to get more done and to have more machines and to make more use of technology because free software is largely free of charge than you would do if you had to pay the licenses for lots of equivalent proprietary software?
Nah. Because if I had to pay the money, I'd just pirate software.
Would you?
Yeah. Like everybody else.
Well, what?
I know it sounds wrong, but everybody does.
It sounds wrong. It is wrong. It doesn't just sound wrong.
I take your point.
That's blatant theft you're admitting to.
Well, the thing is, I don't do it. That's like me saying I would rob a bank. I mean, I'm not doing anything wrong by saying I would rob a bank, but I wouldn't.
Would you?
Even Jesus was tempted.
Would you pirate proprietary Linux software?
No.
What's the difference?
Well, you see,
I mean, if you wanted,
that's like shitting on your own doorstep.
What was the tax thing guy we talked to?
Window
Turbo
tax.
Cash. That was it. Imagine that was proprietary. It was a really good thing, and it ran on Linux rather than you having to run QuickBooks under Wine or something. That existed on Linux, and it was £50, and you didn't want to pay it. Would you pirate it?
Now, this is where my bizarre concept of economics comes into play.
Or would you? Because you presumably pirate QuickBooks by Intuit on a Windows box if you're on Windows.
Well, you see, the thing is that I think it's, in the same way that I've talked before about how I think it's, it's all right. It's more acceptable to rip off music than to break your way into a gig, because bands don't actually make that much money from the music, but they make money from merchandise and they make money from live performances. Mm. So I'd never buy a bootleg t-shirt. because it's actively taking money away from the band.
Yeah.
In the same way that I think it would be wrong to pirate software for a small company, particularly a small company that's investing their time in Linux. Like, I wouldn't want to pirate, let's say, I wouldn't want to pirate, let's say, Postal 2, you know, because they're providing a Linux port of the game.
The game.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to pirate that. But I think it's more ethically acceptable to pirate, let's say, you know, Half-Life.
So, yeah, it's ethically acceptable to pirate kind of Windows software, but not Linux software.
Now, you see, now I don't think it's ethically acceptable to pirate the small company who's producing Windows software.
Oh, no, you see, there's the thing, but that's basically supporting the underdog, which you rated yourself really low on.
Yeah, which
is why I didn't think that would be your answer. But if you're saying, I don't want to harm a small company because that 30 quid off me is a substantial portion of their revenues, but I don't mind harming Microsoft, who make $300 billion a second, then you're supporting the underdog, aren't you?
To a degree, but I'm not really supporting the underdog. I'm just not shitting on it. You know, it's like, I don't actively, you know, I'm probably not actually going to go out and play.
You're meant to shit on the big dog.
I'm probably not going to go and use any of this software because it's probably rubbish, but I'm not going to shit on the underdog. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, going back to Matt's question, if Linux didn't exist and I had to use commercial software and that's the only world that existed, then I can't see me getting very far if I have to pay £200 or £300 for a license fee for each thing.
Yeah.
So I think piracy would be much more rampant in the same way that piracy is rampant in that world. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'd be another sheep who's involved in piracy.
I mean, I remember seeing the other day that, talking of whether piracy would be rampant or not, there's a text editor for Mac OS X, right, that takes over the entire screen, makes it black.
Yeah.
And gives you green text.
I was going to say Lightroom, but it's not Lightroom because that's the photo thing. It's called something like that.
And it's basically a distraction-free environment. And it's $20.
Yeah.
And well, all it is a bloody black screen with green text on it and a cursor.
Much like all
Vim.
much like Nano, for Christ's sake.
Much like all the other macOS arguments, half the people in the world are going, are you people on drugs? For God's sake, it's £20 for a full screen text editor. Menu bar off G in it, and there it is, no £20. And the other people saying, no, because it's different and it's worth paying for the innovation, it's worth paying for the new design, and it's better.
Innovation, my arse.
Well, you know,
it's worth it. If you're the kind of person who gets easily distracted, though, it's worth £20 to not be distracted and get on with your work.
Or
the
idea behind Nano and full screen at
Christ's
sake.
It's not a programmer's text editor, it's a
writer's. It's for journalists and.
Yeah.
Another nonsense.
Another wank.
Speaks Jono the journalist.
Jono KD dog.
Thank you. The other thing, I mean, in terms of the cheapness thing, I don't think I'm that cheap because, as has been noted
in the
past,
pint of the night.
I generally relatively jealous, gave Ack £20 tonight. but no, I'm kidding. But yeah, I tend to, if I get interested in something, I'll tend to splurge a bit of cash on it. So I'll go out and buy
a 54-inch TV.
That's the thing I don't understand, right? You think, well, you know, I don't want £20 for software. I'm not keen on that. But you'll spend £750 on a robot dog that you play with three times
but
and then
sell
on eBay.
Things you hold in your hand and that actually cost something to make, it's different.
And I will spend money on software if I believe that it's good. Like, for example, I've bought Second Life subscriptions. You know, I've spent money on a software thing.
Oh, well, you bought PS3 games, haven't you?
I've bought games.
You have no alternative. There are no non-bought games on the PS3.
I could buy a PS3 and only play the demos from the PlayStation Store.
That would be a worthwhile use of £399.
The demos are not so bad. But I've bought.
Oh, I'm doing really well. Oh, game over.
Before I used Linux, I used to buy software. So
what was the last piece of software you bought?
C++. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was Magix Audio Studio. Magix Audio Studio was the last piece of software that I bought, and that was when we recorded season one of Log Radio. I used Magix Audio Studio. It was $49.99 from PC World.
I thought you always used Cubase.
No, I used Magix. And then I moved to Cubase because I
got a free copy.
Was a journalist and reviewed a copy, and, you know.
I can't remember.
And never gave it back.
What was the last bit? Just out of interest, what was the last bit of software everyone had bought? Stuart language.
I bought
someone else.
I actually bought a copy of OS X 10.4, I think. One of the OS X ones.
Yeah. Stuart.
Do you know? I don't think I've ever bought just a piece of software on its own. I bought a piece of software on, But I don't think I've ever actually bought...
You've never bought a game for, like, an old home computer?
I was just thinking that. Yeah, Spectrum games.
Yeah. But we're talking, like... 199 game.
We're talking from 1985 Smith. Here. Hmm. 1986. I'm like, I haven't bought software for 20 years. I've never thought
about that. What's
the
most embarrassing piece of software you've bought?
This game, which... it was on the... It was either on ZX81 or it was on the Spectrum. No, it wasn't. It was on the Acorn Electron. And the front of it looked brilliant. You remember the pictures you used to get on the front of cassette games? And
you think,
wow, God, if it looks like that. And then when you actually bought it...
It's like two blocks.
It was pictures of, you know, these guys sort of jumping off of a platform and turning into all coloured light and everything. Yeah. And when you actually did it, it turned out to be Connect 4. I was hugely fucking disappointed when I got home.
Four in a row for our American listeners.
Yeah. Enormously disappointed.
I bought Front Page 2000.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
And, you Wazik.
When? Yesterday.
No, it was 1999, I think it was.
Ironic.
And I produced Linux UK, my first open source project. UK Linux.
Front Page.
In
you
front
dirty
page.
Bastard.
Yeah, no one knew for a long time. I used to strip out the metadata at the top.
If you knew enough to do that, you knew enough to not do it in Front Page.
Yeah, but I didn't know. But this is another good example. Linux UK wouldn't have happened because I didn't know anything about HTML and all that shit. But I managed to create a community website for the UK.
Well done.
Because I bent my ethics.
Well, no. The point there is that I don't understand how you knew enough to go in and scrape out the metadata.
Because basically, something wasn't working. I thought, maybe I can... You know, like when you have a... your car breaks down, you lift the bonnet up, and you basically just touch the engine. You don't actually know what you're doing, and then you put the bonnet down and ring the AA, right?
I stopped doing that when they invented engine management systems, because now it's all a computer.
I
just understood it when you just go, oh no, the rotor arm's broken.
I basically opened up the source, and then I just did a search and replace for Front Page, and replaced it with...
John
Owed it. John Owed it.
Sam.
Right, no, okay. There's... Jono scores
on the doors.
Just a very, very... Before we finish, we've got Ravel in the room. Why don't we guess Ravel's scores?
This would be good. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me put my glasses
Let's
on.
Be very quick, because we haven't got much time.
We'd be very quick.
I don't know Ravel as much as well as...
Freedom Crusading, -8.
He actually hates freedom. We hate him.
I actually lock up free software programmers in my basement just to...
Well, I mean, Chris only scored 3. I'd score you about a 2 or something, probably.
I'd say 2 or possibly a 0. I'm kidding. Right. I think a 2, yeah.
Ravel, what would your score be?
I'd say 6 or 7. I think.
For freedom?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Fair play to you.
It's much more important to me than you seem to think.
Yes. Mm. Oh, then I apologise. Tinkering?
3.
I'd have said about a 3.
Yeah, what
3.
Sorry, sorry. Yeah. I'd say about a 3.
Yeah, it's going 3.
Definitely a tinker, though.
Under Doge?
The Doge. I don't know.
I mean, he likes a lot of minority stuff like Marillion.
Yeah, that is minority.
I like it, though, because it's good.
You see, but I think you like the fact that you like it. You're proud of the fact that you like prog rock because no one else does.
I got over that quite a while ago.
How sad is that? You're proud of the fact that you are, like, a person who likes prog rock.
I don't know. I mean,
someone who wears a wizard's outfit and plays 5 keyboards at the same time.
Nothing wrong with wizard's sleeves, mate. Now,
mouth of tired dog.
Underdog, I'd say you're about 3 or 4.
I'd say 7.
Ah, right. There you
go. It's one of the reasons I started using Linux anyway.
Because it was being picked on by the bigger kids?
No, because it was different. It was an alternative. I mean, for fuck's sake, you used to run OS2.
Oh, yeah, good point. I'd forgotten about that. Communitization of the community? You're the expert on community, Bacon. Speak forth on Matt's scores.
I don't know. I'd say that Matt
couldn't give a damn about the community. Give a shit about the community.
You're still in a lot of low scores according to these guys.
Let's just... How often have we seen Matt in Hashlag Radio since he's left the show?
How much did we see him when he was in the show?
I was in there a lot. I left the show because of Hashlag Radio.
What, you thought they were all a bunch of wankers?
We should clarify that he's referring to the IRC channel.
No,
and the podcast.
I think he's Alia. No.
I bet he's going to ask us to cut that bit out, isn't he?
No, I don't care. No, I've left.
Communitization, I reckon that's about 5.
I'd put myself down as, I don't know.
A 7, maybe?
I think a 6.
Okay.
And
cheapness.
He's fucking cheap. He's fucking cheap. The fact that we went out the other day and he wouldn't go to the cash point because he had to pay a quid to get the money out. And he deliberately walked to Morrison's to go and
queue. I got some apple juice for that pound.
That's the definition of cheap.
Right, yeah. 10 though, because I won't pirate software, so...
No, well, fair play then. So you go with the freedom.
Yeah.
The cheapness. Free money freedom.
The free as in speech and the free as in cheapness are the two important things to me, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so we've now done, including Matt, we've now done everyone's...
We have.
Top C Sparks and Aid.
They don't count.
they've left. We would be interested in hearing other people's.
We would. We'd love to hear your scores. So send your scores in and some justification. Yeah, particularly people who we know in the community.
Yeah, I mean, putting them on the forums would be interesting as well, I think, actually.
Because there has been a thread, hasn't there? There, I believe.
It'd be interesting to see how different people compare on the forums.
I think if you go to linkpot.net/insert word here, you may be able to get to it.
linkpot.net/Nazi Final Solution or something. I love it when it comes up with really inappropriate words.
Okay, our good friends over in California at the SoCal Linux Expo sent us a little MP3 promoting their event, which is happening in February. This is important for two reasons. Firstly, it's a pretty cool conference. And secondly, you know what, people? I'm going to be there doing the keynote, so... if there's ever a good reason to get there, that's it.
By now, you've probably heard about Linux, but whether you're a pro or have barely heard the word, Scale. The Southern California Linux Expo has something for you. Scale 6X will have over 50 speakers covering the hottest topics in open source software and more than 75 booths this year representing a wide range of commercial products and nonprofit organizations. Don't forget Friday's special sessions with Docs, open source software in the healthcare industry, the Women in Open Source Conference, and new this year is the Open Source Software in Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2008 at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles, California. For more information and to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org, use promo code CAST, that's C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration. We'll see you at Scale.
End of the show, and theoretically time for the emails, but first we have an apology to make.
We do.
Which is that last week we didn't award one of the special, beautiful Lug Radio t-shirts for best email or forum post of the week. Yep. Those people who have already won a t-shirt and are wondering where the fuck it is, I apologise, that's all my fault, you'll get them soon.
Think that's a stupid hat for corporate tap.
Exactly. But the person who actually won... was Chris Fletcher.
Yes. Well done, Chris.
So this is the second apology, but we have already apologised to this chap. this was the chap you may remember who sent us a perfectly sane and reasonable email, and Jono read it out, and then also read out the company he works for and their address, because he's an idiot.
Thank you. So thank you once again.
Chris delivered the unbelievable thermonuclear boot to us last week in the following way. He said, first of all, thanks a bloody lot for reading out the company name in my automatic email signature. I wasn't expecting that. All I can say is the doctor that delivered you into the world should be shot for smuggling dope. And he's quite right.
That's a fair point, yeah.
So we were lost to, as to who to have executed last week, but Jono's doctor...
Thank you.
Now pushing out the daisies. So there will be a t-shirt winging its way to Chris Fletcher, Britbox Internet for Schools, a division of P Technologies PL, and their phone number is...
+61 1300
650 60. Their fax number is
+61 1300 650 60.
And you can email Chris.
I was going to say, how would you email Chris?
You can email Chris at chris@.net.au.
That'll fucking learn you.
So, Mr. Fletcher, you are now the proud recipient of a Lug Radio t-shirt. And
or
if you'd
like, at some point in the future.
And if you'd like to send us a different address that you'd like us to send it to, that would be fine.
Yeah. Incidentally, your email address has been blocked from the Lug Radio account. We're kidding. Send us an email and we'll send you a lovely t-shirt. The t-shirts look very cool.
They will
look very cool when they're actually fucking arrived, won't they?
Well, I'm getting there. Be quiet. Yeah,
in theory, they look very cool.
This would be Jono. Oh no, where's Ken Fallon's N800? Hey! Oh, I've lost it for 4 months. Bacon complaining about this.
I did say that I should never be trusted with sending stuff out.
Where have you got the t-shirts from? Sweatshop.com.
Sweatshop?
Er.
It's like a factory somewhere. So, factory. Matthew, P, Captain P, Captain P, Ravel. On to the next email.
Well, we have an email with the subject line of suggestion for feature on Lug Radio, which is always welcome, I'm sure, in these parts.
It is, indeed. From
Axel Lilienkrantz.
Axel. This guy Axel. Was born in the 80s.
Axel well, lived in the 80s. Yeah. Presumably, his theme song will be Axel L.
Moving on. If we were to hum that theme tune, could the record label behind it bust us?
No, I think probably. They'd try.
Really?
Yeah.
Should we try it?
No.
No.
Why not?
Because I don't want to get busted by a record label. What? Because we're humming it.
My potential. Read on.
Read on.
Sorry, carry on.
Axel, who's clearly of an Eastern European persuasion with a name like Lilienkrantz.
Here we go.
Hi. I'm speaking to you now with a bandana. I think you should do a feature on Fish, a wicked cool command line shell, on Lug Radio. It's a project that tries very hard to make the command line much easier to use while still being as powerful as ever. Features such as very good tab completion, syntax highlighting, really awesome multi-line editing, and much else makes Fish both newbie-friendly and powerful.
Just what the fuck is really awesome multi-line editing?
Also, who knows? Why did he turn into the Count in the middle of that?
Because he's from, where he's got the name Lilienkrantz.
They call me Axel Lilienkrantz because I love to count. One fish shell.
Fish shell. Maybe that's what happens when you open a new tab.
In the same way as I discovered again tonight that when I burnt a CD, I had that particularly rewarding sound at the end of K3B. I don't need rewarding for burning a CD, you fucking idiot.
K3B plays a little funfair. It's the most random thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
When it fails, it kind of goes.
why do I need an audio prompt about my successful failure?
People have been talking about doing, being slightly serious here for a second, have been talking about bringing audio stuff into desktop so you don't have to have a little pop-up window that says I've done it or something. Yeah. And I quite like the idea in theory, but no one's managed to do anything other than make it go do-do-do-do when you've done something
and
successful.
And people have also written very long drawn-out usability studies about how colour affects the desktop experience.
Which it does.
It's all unless you're colourblind.
No, it's so, not all bollocks at all.
Anyway, maybe fish. Don't press things. Let's talk about this really exciting shell.
Fish.
Yes.
As I may have said to you before, once or twice, I've used Tilda before, the thing that comes down off the top of your screen, goes back up again, but gets buggered by Nano, right?
It's granted.
Nano gets buggered by it. But yes.
There is buggering involved.
Tilda isn't a shell. Tilda's a thing that a window that Bash appears in.
So this is different to Bash?
No, this is the same as Bash. This is not the same as Tilda.
No, but it's not Bash. It's not just a window that opens Bash. This... Fish is a shell. Bash alternative. Yeah,
it sounds quite good, actually.
An X term which has Bash inside it.
Yep.
This time you'll have an X term with Fish inside it.
Yeah. So will it have all the Bash commands that I'm used
They're
to?
They're probably very, fairly similar. Well, I mean,
at a very basic level, shells are all the same. You type the name of a command, it runs it, no problem at all. It's the advanced stuff. Like, if you want to say, run this command on each of the following files, then different shells may do it in a different way. And things like tab completion, you know, Bash does tab completion of commands. And you can set it up so it does completion of other stuff. But things like Zsha and presumably Fish will do things like complete command line options.
Right. Why isn't Bash...
You only know that because I told you that earlier.
I knew Zsha did it.
You stole it, didn't you?
You stole my point.
I don't know
the only thing I know about Fish.
The interesting thing I know about Zsha is it will do tab completion across an SSH connection, which I was stunningly impressed with when I saw it. I mean, I'm, you know, interested in this kind of thing.
Is there a Fish podder?
But, we need to go away and actually try using Fish. Try using different shells and see whether it helps or whether it's only a thing for Ultra GIMP.
By the way, Axel also says, Lug Radio is mostly about talking. That's the unbelievable wisdom, isn't it? And that means that flashy graphics like Compass really won't shine, but Fish is text-based, so it really suits the medium.
I can describe graphics by words and my mouth. Really? Look at it.
Woo. It's a circle. Well,
anyway,
well, we should go and try out fish, and we'll be able to tell if he's right or not.
Why don't we try out fish? I've never really tried out different shells. I never use bash.
Lastly, I should note that I am the main fish author.
Oh,
well, yeah, he is. But to be honest, we like
that. That's the point.
Yeah, he's the cod father.
He's waiting for cod.
We want people to write in and tell us about their projects
and fish jokes.
Yeah,
send us your fish jokes for that segment.
And fish jokes. So
send us. Yeah, let's see how many fish jokes we can cram into the review of it.
I'm sure there's got to be an Essex girl joke in there somewhere. Isn't there?
I know the one.
So check out fishshell.org for more information.
That'll be a shocker.
The shocker.
Yes. Okay.
Not shellfish.org.
We're reading the emails off the screen again, so there's a slight pause while Jono finds the mouse.
Christoph, King of the Ring.
We had an email with the subject of "It just works, TM, on a laptop" from Simon Pascal Klein, or Kleepas. Is that how you pronounce it?
Well, an inferior version of Calvin Klein. Like a copy, cheap knockoff.
When he grows up, he'll be Simon C++ Klein.
Has he got a Rolex watch as well?
Nippon camera.
He says basically he was listening to one of our old episodes from a season long past, listening to Matthew Garrett giving advice about which laptops have the best Linux support, which Matthew Garrett talks about quite a lot. And he says, he also, you may want to take note of this one here.
Fuck off. I know. I already
That's
know
military
this.
Military grade laptop.
Shut up. Right? My laptop runs Gobuntu, actually, so you can all bugger off. Next time I buy a laptop, I'm going to check it first. I know. Fuck off. Stop giving me shit
laptop
about it.
Laptop is so military grade and proprietary, he actually has an underground bunker that he works in. Deny it.
I have an underground bunker. The laptop happens to be in it.
You live in an underground. You also work from a fucking hollowed out volcano, and you know it.
Is it like for you? Is it Gobuntu versus the Decepticons or something?
That's what the next release should be called.
Transformers have got lips in the new movie. How weird is that?
How can they have lips? Anyway. They're made out of metal.
I don't know. Oh, say that again. Last word.
Metal.
I'll just say it again.
Shut up.
Metal. Right. What?
Anyway, he says Feisty ran quite well on his Dell Inspiron 6400, and he then upgraded that to Dudsy and expected everything to break, and it didn't. It all just worked straight fine out of the box.
Oh, shebang. Ooh. That's fantastic.
Power management, 3D acceleration, etc.
The SD card reader, which basically doesn't work on anyone's laptop, worked fine, the inbuilt Bluetooth. We fixed all the problems with things like, you know, the screen not working when you boot on a laptop these days. Yes. But a lot of the odds and sods hardware, things like SD readers, Bluetooth, quite often doesn't work out of the box. He doesn't mention fingerprint recognition. I don't know whether that's because it hasn't got it.
I noticed that some Dell laptops these days coming out with bloody SIM card slots.
So now that's interesting, because a bloke at work today, he had to take the battery out of his laptop and he discovered a SIM card in it.
Yeah.
I said, cool, what's that for? So I assume it does
3G.
It's
got a 3G modem built in.
Bloody brilliant idea, in my opinion.
There's no support for them at the moment.
Yeah, I was looking at some Dell machines have got these 3D modem.
I think it's a bloody ingenious idea.
I mean, I've been looking at some laptops, because I'm going to probably buy a new laptop soon, and I've been looking and, pretty much every laptop that I've looked at, I've done a search on Google. And
it requires proprietary software to support, yes?
No, everything pretty much works out the box. I mean, obviously, there's going to be some binary blobs that may be required, but that's the reason why my Freedom Crusading score is less high than yours. And that's also the reason why I'll be able to connect to a fucking wireless network.
My conference laptop works perfectly, thank you very much.
It's very good. So we've had an email from Andrew Mason. Of Fortnum and Mason. That's a lie, by the way.
Andrews and Arnold.
Software integration. He says, hi, guys. Just commenting on your question of distros having better integration between client and server. We talked about this in the last episode.
Yep.
I don't use one of the major desktops. My distro of choice doesn't use PAM.
What
the fuck?
What ancient bullshit distro is he using? What distro
Tiny use? Sofa?
GNU/bullshit.
I thought... Yeah, that's like saying my car doesn't use steering technology. You know?
PAM, we should explain, is the thing that does kind of logins.
Yeah. I mean, a long time ago, it was kind of a new thing, and some things used PAM and some things didn't. But as far as I was aware, everyone used it. Just like a basic component of the login process.
Don't stop there. Because he goes and he says, I don't use one of the major desktops. My distro of choice doesn't use PAM. And as a result, only recently got the Dbus HAL auto mount because they had to work around that dependency.
So he's been typing mount /dev/CD-ROM in a terminal for the last 5 years when everyone else has.
How about rather than working around it, just use Pam?
As well, but no.
Why?
That's just habit more than anything else.
Do you think this guy's actually writing to us from the past?
It's possible.
Maybe so. Maybe it's one of these emails that's taken 10 years to be delivered. You know?
Maybe it's like, maybe he opened up a cupboard in his house and went into like the 1890s or something.
But based on the way our jury rigged email system works, it wouldn't surprise me if he sent this in 1997 and we only just got it.
However, I still think that as long as it's free in every sense, this is a fantastic thing. Pushing the bounds is a massive advantage of free software and should be exploited. I think the only thing that I would dislike is that if it was developed in a closed environment like XGL was. So I guess if, say, Ubuntu were developing a backup integration system, it would be nice for the dev team to maybe email a few of the other distros and say, we need to do this. This is how we're going to go about doing it. So it's basically saying it's fine for Ubuntu server and Ubuntu desktop to work better together, as an example, but so long as it's developed in an open way. And I agree with him.
That seems fair.
That's fair. I mean, it all we had this argument, and I don't want to go over it all again, but there were ways of doing this that I agree with and ways that I think are wrong. Mm. But generally, open is good.
Well, he says Beagle is a good example of where a useful piece of software had to be re-implemented by others because some distros wouldn't use Mono. Anyway, that's my thoughts. Great show and keep up the fantastic work. On a side note, ACK. I would also to be able to buy commercial free software.
Oh, yes.
I think that would be fantastic. I think the business model can work personally. If you look at most projects, it is only run by a handful of contributors. You could easily have a subscription model where you pay $120 for a year's updates. Alternatively, you could pay no money and get these updates anyway, which is the downside of the business model.
Yes, that's the problem.
There would be a few people who repackage it, but at the end of the day, if you want / use that software, you'll probably pay to get the updates first and from their developers, and you still have freedom that goes a long way with it. Many thanks. I don't know why we don't just say, hang on a second, that, because I don't believe that does work.
No.
Because that's basically enthusiasts. Just accept donations. Then you don't have to provide the updates. Give everybody free updates and just accept donations.
As far as the GPL, do you actually have to distribute the source code to everybody or just to the people who use... Like, if somebody paid $120 for a subscription and you gave them the source code... But nobody else, would that be legitimate?
You are perfectly allowed to do that.
It could work, then.
The flaw with it is that it only takes one guy to pay the $120 one time and then distribute it from his website.
And call themselves CentOS.
Yeah, exactly. Or Blender, in fact.
Yes.
Didn't they buy the Blender source code off Not a Number?
God, I can't remember.
Yeah,
I think that was
slightly different. That wasn't Not a Number saying we'll sell it to you under the GPL. That was Not a Number saying we'll give you the source code, do what you like with it. We don't want it anymore. And then they had to put the money, and then they could GPL it or whatever. Yeah, but you are perfectly allowed under the GPL to not put it up for download. But what you can't do is if you sell it to someone, you can't stop them then turning around and giving it away for free.
Next email from Spam Cannon.
From Peter Cannon. email from Peter Cannon, who's a Wolves Lug guy, who was lucky enough to receive a Nokia N810, which is the one with the keyboard, under the Christmas tree.
Yes, he did.
And he has kindly sent us a review of it, which he sent as a Word document, I have to say. I was tempted to reply with the FSF little thingy saying, don't send us Word documents, but I get into trouble with Jono if I do stuff like that. So
I should clarify that that's not because I don't think that sending Word documents is a bad thing. It's because I think the FSF...
is a bad thing.
Anyway. He sent us quite a long review, which we're very grateful for. We're just going to read the summary here. But he says... given that it costs around £300, I think Nokia needs a slap on the wrist for a couple of complaints he's got, which are the instructions are appalling. There's no printed manual in the box. You get a PDF. There's no syncing or communication software either in the box or available for download, and the carry case for it is pants. But he does go on to say those things are on his gripe list, but he's chuffed to bits. All he needs now is lots of people with open Wi-Fi connections so he can stay on the net wherever he goes. Using my Nokia 6300 phone via Bluetooth could work out expensive, which is interesting, actually, because we don't have a lot of free Wi-Fi here in the UK. There's quite a lot in the States. Mm. An awful lot of shops have got it and coffee shops and whatnot, but a lot of places here, they're all, you know, a T-Mobile hotspot where you have to pay £25 a month to subscribe to it. So things where they rely on Wi-Fi aren't as useful here. But anyway, sorry. Peter goes on to say, the instructions are crap. There's a PDF file buried somewhere within the file system. That'd be a nightmare to read while trying to set up your chat program or whatever. I was pleasantly surprised that my sausage fingers can use the keyboard pretty well.
So Aki must feel his pain at this point.
And in conjunction with... I have slim pianist's fingers.
That's right.
Slim pianist's finger.
Now you've got a.
I can.
He's got a penis like a bookie's pencil.
He can, in conjunction with the stylus, I can nip around stuff quickly. Once you have the application set up, any Linux user will feel at home. I install Pidgin and found another sad friend to talk to on Christmas Day. the signal strength is good and the build quality is sturdy. It's one of those gadgets that just feels good in your hands. He says he hasn't tried out the VoIP feature or Bluetooth phone connections, but the GPS stuff works and everything. So he's basically very happy with it. So it was a pretty positive review from Peter about the N810.
He's a good guy, Peter Cannon.
He is.
I hope we get to see him at Lug Radio Live in the UK when we announce the dates.
I think we should, yes. I mean, he does actually say that there are some instructions for instructions available for installing KDE on your N810, but he was too scared to try it.
Wow.
And
why would you want to do that?
I agree with him, to be honest with you.
Speaking of KDE.
Speaking of KDE.
El Ravel, would you like to read the next...
Jesus, if I could read that, I would.
Do you want me to read it because I'm closer?
Well, I'll give it a go.
Okay. Do you want me to try and jack up the file size?
Please.
This is from the forums.
It's actually a forum post rather than an email from Ryan.
Thanks for saying it for me. KDE wants to have his cake and eat it.
He leaves the show. Things are coming...
Shall I start?
Go on then.
He says, right, this...
Look at him, sorry, carry on.
This is not against Aaron Segal, and in retrospect, it should be called KD Wants to Eat Cake, etc., rather than Aaron. Oh, right, I see. It seems that Ryan originally called his post Aaron Wants to Have His Cake and Eat It, but then it's post-edited. Anyway, he says, after listening to a few different podcasts with Aaron on the show and reading his blogs, it seems he wants, as the saying goes, to have his cake and eat it. He's going on... Basically saying that Aaron's saying that KDE4 is a developer version, so please don't give us flack, it's a developer version. Then he's also complaining that KDE4 for Kubuntu 8.04 won't be long-term support, which if you have been listening to him, makes sense, as he says 4.0 isn't for the mass public, 4.1 will be. But if they'd released KDE4 a few months back, then 4.1 might have been ready for 8.04.
It's not a bad point, to be honest.
The man has a point. They also threw a big launch party for 4.0 when they said it was a developer version. Why not just call it 3.99? And then, when it would have been 0.1 release, then call that a 4.0. Because for the mass populace, 4.1 release isn't quite as good as a nice round 4.0.
It does sound like crack 4.0.
Yeah, I mean,
to be fair,
he makes the same point we did, and the KDE, and we've already described the KDE team's arguments against that, which is that no one had tested if it was called 3.99, which is a very good argument, I think.
He says, though, it seems that a lot of big developers have been hiding behind the excuse that they aren't like proprietary vendors, and therefore we shouldn't apply the same rules to them. But, in my opinion, for example, when Ubuntu released 8.04, they want to compete directly with XP for market share. If people complained about the theme, they were to go, well, if you don't like the theme, make one yourself. Then who would take them seriously? No one but Aaron seems to be playing that card of, well, it's open source. I mean, we want to compete with the proprietary world, but then if we don't do well, we'll just say that we're open source, we haven't much money. And frankly, it's starting to grate. If KDE wants to play with the big boys, they need to learn to take the reviews, etc., on the chin.
Indeed.
Interesting post.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, I think he makes some valid points in the fact that they seem to want the attention with 4.0, but then saying, well, it might be a bit shit, so don't bollock us. So they want the attention, but they don't want any bollockings. And I haven't read Aaron's post regarding the LTS, about Kubuntu and LTS, but it is a bit odd. I think before commenting, I think I'm going to read it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole completely separate argument about why Kubuntu isn't long-term support Ubuntu release this time. The argument is that Ubuntu this time, Ubuntu Hardy, is a long-term support release, but Kubuntu won't be.
Precisely because is it going to have 4.0 in it?
Well, they're going to release two, as I understand it. Kubuntu stock will be 3.5. 3.5, but you'll be able to upgrade to 4 quite easily. But as I understand it here, Canonical's argument is that we don't want to make 4.0 a long-term support release because it's not finished yet. Yeah. And we don't want to make 3.5 a long-term support release because we don't believe you'll still be patching it 5 years from now.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I don't know. The KDE people seem to not think that's a good argument. Canonical seem to think it is a good argument. I don't know enough about the detail to talk about it. But it's something we can... Because we're talking to Aaron in the next show, and we'd love to hear his opinion on that.
Certainly from a Canonical perspective, I mean, I was involved in some of the discussion around it. I wasn't involved in the decision about the LTS, but it's very much a case of naturally an LTS needs to be rock solid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the idea of shipping any 0.0 release in many cases is nerve-wracking. And particularly yeah. KDE, where it's such a huge architectural change. And they've said this could be full of bugs. It, I mean, I can understand. You don't want to make that into an LTS.
So,
I mean,
so will the next Ubuntu release, whenever that will be, 8.10
undecided.
Generally the way it works, LTS, there's no fixed path when an LTS happens.
Right.
But around the time that we choose the next LTS for Ubuntu, so you know, in probably a couple of years or whatever, then I think there'll be another decision will be made. I don't think it's going to be a case of we're never going to do it again.
It's not a case of we're going to skip Ubuntu LTS release this time, but in 6 months' time it will be. And that
I don't
even
know.
Though it's out of step with
I think it'll be.
You think you're just going to skip it?
I suspect there'll be a reevaluation, and then the decision will be made.
I suppose it depends how solid it seems.
I'm not speaking for Canonical here, but I'd imagine we'll try and line up LTS releases. So.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see that theory absolutely from Canonical's point of view. But on the flip side, if I was a KDE person, I thought I want to run a long-term support release because I want long-term support. And I want to run KDE, then you can either run Dapper or you can wait another 2 years. At which point it'll be 4 years old and they'll be dead sad about that.
It is, but that's just what happens when a KDE and a brand spanking new KDE release comes out around the time when we need to make a decision about LTS. It's kind of just the way the kind of
an unfortunate coincidence.
It'd be interesting to see whether 6 months from now they say this is going to be a Ubuntu LTS release. Mm.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Christoph.
Oh, is it me? I can't actually see the screen now.
Is that better?
Well, I can see half the screen now.
All right, I'll read it.
I'm at the wrong end of the studio.
This is another forums post, and this is from our friend and yours, Bruno Board, Kno on the forums. He says, why would you leave? He says, the Top Trumps shows how and why we got into free software in general, and what do we think is interesting in the free software moment. As Chris Proctor, our friend over in the corner, announced he'd switch from OpenBSD to NetBSD because of the Theo Durant RMS recent troll. You'll have heard Chris's explosion in the last episode. He said, I was wondering, why would you switch from your favorite distro to another one, or why would you stop using free software, more generally speaking? What could happen that would piss you off so much that you would break your commitment to free software? What kind of disaster would make you leave? Now, he's posted this in the ideas for the show section, which is on the forums at forums.logo.org. So, let's go around very quickly. Do you want to start, Ak? Why would you leave? What would piss you off to the degree that you'd leave the free software world?
Nothing.
Nothing could happen.
I can't think of anything that could happen that would make me... Because the alternative... Well... Presumably, if you leave the free software world, you go in one of two directions. You either go to proprietary software or you go to no software.
Right? Or write your own.
I can't imagine a world in which I would go to proprietary software. And I'll be honest with you, I can't imagine a world where I don't use computers at all.
No.
Therefore, nothing.
I think we all broadly share that view. But let's say, what would make you leave in terms of being an active contributor? And actively interested and involved instead of just a user. So still using free software, but not actually taking part in the
people
community.
Stepping away from the free software ideal is the primary thing. If they said, well, we don't care, we'll do 70% free software, 30% not, and it's not like that. You'll just have to fucking live with it.
Okay.
You know, if the Linux kernel started integrating more proprietary software, for example, but that's the main thing. Okay. Freedom.
I think for me it would have to be. Either someone insists or a trend towards insisting that everyone who uses free software or is involved in the community had to think a certain way, and that there was sniping and bullying from people who were trying to enforce that sort of thought. Either way, whether it was on more of the free software side or as access, maybe more on the going towards the proprietary side. Or other than that, on a very, very practical note, if I just couldn't earn a living, and sorry to sell out and everything, but if I couldn't earn a living without using proprietary software, then I would have to do it. So, for example, if you know, a nuclear disaster blew up every free software contributor on Earth and kind of Ubuntu and everything remained in stasis for the next 10 years, and yet I had to do some work that required some new development, then, you know.
You've filled us all with joy now, Matt.
It's rather an extreme scenario and unlikely to happen.
So if there was the mass death of all free software contributors.
Yes.
Suddenly got very heavy in the studio.
Okay, so, on to our last level.
Both good.
Thanks.
Both good reasons there, but I mean, I would have said a few weeks ago, yeah, there's nothing particularly that would make me move away from a particular distro, but obviously there is. When the entire community around a distro just go off on such a stupid tangent to the, you know, that I just hate them all. And then I walk away to something else.
What would make it, I mean, Bruno's basic question there was, what would make you leave free software? So, not what would make you move from OpenBSD to NetBSD.
Yeah, what would make you leave?
Right. I suppose if the entire open source community went off on such a massive tangent and kind of, moved away from what I believe in, I suppose.
Or if there was, I mean, even it wouldn't have to be the entire open source community, but maybe a dominant trend, perhaps.
Yeah, the dominant, well, I don't mind being in the minority, but just kind of, if everybody was moving towards proprietary software and saying, we don't care about the freedom anymore, or moving towards, you must be completely 100% free or you're a worthless human being, you know, then I would kind of walk away, basically, because I'd probably still use it, but I wouldn't be involved in the community anyway.
I hate
to
sound like an adulterous Lothario, but if I was to move switch distro, it simply would be if something better came up.
Yeah,
I've done it two or three times now.
Many of us have.
SUSE to Red Hat to Debian to Ubuntu.
Finding a better solution.
I don't think that's particularly a question. I think all of us, if a better distro than the ones we're using, came along,
actually, I drift
we'd
between
switch.
Distros just purely on chance anyway, whatever CD I find.
But you're not leaving free software as a concept, it was moving.
No, but Bruno did ask what would make you switch distro, and I think for me, as I'm so much more enmeshed in the world of Ubuntu and everything, I think it would take a lot more for me to move from Ubuntu than it would from previous distros. You're right, Johnny.
Answering Bruno's question, it would take a lot to make me leave the free software community, a lot. But I tell you, there's some days when you think you're making it very difficult. It makes it difficult. And in a similar way to what Matt was saying, it's when people ram their ethics down my throat. And it's like when people can only see absolute, zealous 100% commitment to free software as the only acceptable path forward. And when they say that, and if you're even vaguely not whiter than white, if you're even vaguely less perfect than them, then you're seen as unacceptable and you're seen as a traitor in some ways. And people like that bully people into their way of thinking, and it's extreme and it's intolerant, and I find that disgusting at times. And the thing is, that really makes me think, well, hang on a second. If the world became more like that, even though it will become a more of a free software world, to me it will become intolerant world. And I don't want to be a part of that. And, you know, ramming any kind of extremist view down people's throats, I think, is a bad thing.
Plurality is what makes the world work.
And that's where
creative genius comes from.
Yeah, and it's, some of the greatest contributors in the free software world aren't perfect in terms of the eyes of free software, and some people are quite extreme about
Linus,
it.
For a
and,
start.
Yeah, and it's, but they have incredible contributions to make, and that's the reason why we've got such a fantastically diverse community. And that is the thing that really turns me off sometimes. Mm. And I'm certainly not alone. No, a lot of people who I've mentioned in the show have been in very similar positions. So,
Kind of interesting that none of those reasons were technical reasons. Nobody cares if it's hard to use.
I guess one of mine was.
But mostly...
If all development stopped on it.
Only if you had to make a living. But there's no kind of... If it was really hard to use.
My argument there, I think, is that I have enough confidence in the free software community that it won't be too hard to use for me.
It's the one thing it's the one thing as well that always, in pretty much most cases, always improves. Always got technically...
And also, having seen Vista, to come back to Vista, I think Ubuntu is a lot easier to use than Vista is.
I ought to point out that the reason it always improves is it's the one thing we always know how to fix.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a load of other stuff that we don't know how to fix, or some t- times we don't know how to fix it, but we always know how to fix technical problems. They're easy.
Yeah. Apart from that poor sod who hasn't got PAM on his system and is mounting his bloody drives manually.
Well, you know, fair play.
Upgrade your system. That's the technical solution.
Yeah. Just use a distro that uses PAM.
I think.
He must be doing it as an intellectual exercise, though.
Yeah.
Or at least try a Five Doors.
Try what?
Madame PAM. And
oh, Jesus. I think Bruno deserves the T-shirt.
You think so?
This episode.
You think so?
I personally think he does.
I think it's an interesting...
I think it's an excellent post, and it's an interesting subject.
Yeah. It is, and it provokes a lot of discussion, I think.
I'd love to hear what other people would think about this.
Yeah, what would convince you to leave Free Software?
So I think we should maybe point people towards that thread.
Yes, I think so, yes. The thread is on the forums.lugradio.org. So wing your way over there and
it's
find...
Why would you leave?
Wow. Ideas for the show.
In the ideas
for the show forum on forums.lugradio.org. So, Bruno, if you could... I think we might have your address somewhere, but if you could wing us your address over...
We'll send you a T-shirt.
We'll drop a T-shirt during the post just as soon as I actually get some T-shirts.
Surely it's number 3 Garlic Lane, Stripey Jumper Town, France.
Not being too stereotypical there.
Sacrebleu.
I'm assuming Bruno will be... We'll be demonstrating his T-shirt at Lugradio Live in the UK. We hope to be announcing dates for that in the next, probably in the next show. But we're literally on the cusp of confirming the dates for Lugradio Live in the UK. We're very, very close.
Yes. If you listened to the show last week, then you'll know that we've already confirmed dates for Lugradio Live in the US.
Which is...
April the 12th and 13th, 2008, at the Metreon in San Francisco.
Yes.
We have our designer hard at work avoiding my email so he doesn't have to do a new design for the site. No, Mike, we love you, really. Our designer, Mike Evans, is working on a new design for the site, so you don't have to look at the horrific eyesore that I put up. And we will have registration open soon. A point there, a question that I'd like to ask people, is that we need some way that you can register and pay for it. In the past, we've used no checks, but no checks only work in the UK, so we need something for the US. Now, there's PayPal, there's Google Checkout, whatever, but Google Checkout requires you to have a Google account. PayPal doesn't require you to have a PayPal account, but it will hassle the shit out of you to get one. So if people have got suggestions for how that would work, how they'd like to see it work, how they would like to pay, then do please let me know.
Some American websites have seen UCC bill. I don't know if that's...
We'll look into it.
Am I supposed to know what that is?
If you don't, then don't worry.
All right, okay.
It's a specialist website.
Also, go to lugradio.org/live to find out details about Lugradio Live in the US and the UK site when it's up there as well.
Yep, absolutely.
And importantly, we have call for papers open, so, well, kind of open, in the fact that we're accepting suggestions.
Yes, so drop us an email if you'd like to speak at Lugradio Live in the US or Lugradio Live in the UK, which I can unsurprisingly reveal will be at some time over the summer.
Yeah. So do send your suggestions for what you'd like to talk about to show at Lugradio.org. We, as people will know from previous Lugradio Lives, we don't just have rock stars there. We have interesting people talk about interesting things who are relatively unknown. Yeah.
And we also be doing boffs, presumably, as well. We want people for
indeed.
Boffs.
Indeed, running boff sessions and exhibitors as well.
One of the things
lightning
that,
talks and all that
yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Stuff.
I mean, one of the things that we'd like to see is kind of cool exhibition stands. So if you've got something other than just, you know, here's a table, here's our project, if you want to come and... There was some people at Linux World a couple of years ago who took flight gear, the flight simulator, but they built, like, a whole helicopter that you could sit in. If you've got something like that, that's wicked. We'd love to see that.
Love stuff like that.
IBM, I think.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Well, IBM.
There is a guy at Scale who has like a flight gear cockpit thing.
You see, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We think it'd be cool. If you'd like to come along and do a Segway race or something, that'd be excellent.
Anything goes. You know, we're trying to make things fairly interesting. And many of the favourites from the Lugradio Lives in the past will be there, such as the Masturbate and
the Hour of Power and other things.
Low-tech
and something else, you know.
Yep, absolutely.
Maybe thinking about. It will be very, very good. Obviously, there'll be a live recording at both the shows as well of Lugradio, so it's always fun to do that in front of an audience. So, show at Lugradio.org for your speaker suggestions and if you want to speak.
Okay, and go off to forums.lugradio.org and take part in the discussion.
Are we going to talk about the competition now?
Yes.
So, Pimp My Lugradio is the competition for the Triple E PC, which we fucking love.
It's
great. Go to lugradio.org/pinmyLugradio for details.
Yes. Yes, it's absolutely.
And we are probably going to announce the winner in the next show. I'm not going to flat out guarantee that, but you ought to think in terms of having about a week or so from when this comes out to get your entries in.
So somebody at the lug last night, whenever it was, had a Zubuntu on their, or eZubuntu on their EPC, running enemy territory, which I was well impressed by.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
Bloody hell. It was quite impressive.
Yep. So we think the E's lovely. We'd love to see. We've had loads of entries.
We've had some excellent entries and a diverse range of entries. So we've had audio, we've had video, we've had graphics. We've also had someone who wrote a PHP script to help promote the show.
Spammer.
And we've had animated banners as well.
Yep.
We've had a range of different things. Do send in whatever you think could be useful for pimping Lug Radio.
Yep, absolutely.
We definitely want, we've had some good entries, but we definitely want more. So,
what about for the untalented? What should they do?
They can fuck off. They can listen to some other podcast, like Lug Reality or something.
Oh, that's not very inclusive.
With fucking
it?
Backgammon Griffin or whatever it
is. I'm sure all our listeners are highly talented people, so that's not important.
Good.
So, yes, get your entries in.
So we're done.
We are done.
Thank you, Mr. Revelle, for coming back.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
It's always good to see you again.
Oh, it's always lovely to see you as well, guys.
It was very kind of you to stand in for the absent Adam.
Yeah, Madam.
Madam Sweet.
Madam Sweet.
So, it's been nice. Would you like to close the show?
And now the end is near. I've drunk my beer. I don't know, it's been lovely being here. Thank you very much. Go to forums@lugradio.org, email show@lugradio.org, Wolverhampton Politics. See you all later. Thanks very much. Goodbye and good night.